Hi, Gerard.
Hello.
And Joanna, hello.
Hi.
You decided to sacrifice Sunday time to talk with us.
Yes.
I know that doesn't always happen, so I feel privileged. So no Amar and no Omar yet. Maybe they'll join us, maybe not. But you guys, I hope both feel like talking.
Maybe.
And Gerard, your image is frozen for me. Is the sound? Oh, he's come back in a minute. Okay. So he clicked something off. And I'm still waiting for yours to show up. Are you able to see me yet?
Yes.
Okay. Last
You
class, it
don't
was
see me?
not yet. Last class, it
Oh.
was like half an hour before the webcams came on for me. So now I don't see either of you again. I see little
I can see you.
circular whirr coming.
Ooh.
So, I don't know, my crazy computer, crazy storms. Hopefully, you'll show up soon.
I can see you, Holly, but I cannot see Joanna.
So, as long as our sound holds clear, we'll deal with it. I love this book. I have fun rereading chapters all the time. So chapter two, Irina and I posted something in the group, but I haven't seen replies from either of you yet. So what do you have to say about chapter two? What questions does chapter two make you want to ask? What do you want to know when you read chapter two? So much mystery, this strange place, comfort objects, ceremonies for the ones and twos and eights and twelves. And it sounds pretty scary to be a 12.
When I check on the internet or Wikipedia about books like The Giver, 1984, there is a word. There is the weird word, dystopian, a dystopian society. Or that dystopian or dystopian?
I say dystopian. I don't. I would say dystopian. I don't know if I'd be corrected by a dictionary or not. But dystopian. And what does that mean? What does that refer to?
Is I think it's a society, a structured society.
Well, it's a type of place. So you may have heard of utopia.
Yes.
So utopia and utopian, but these are not utopian societies. They are dystopian. And what does the prefix dys mean?
So I
Not
think
good.
dystopia, not good, yes, because utopia means good, so I guess dystopia must mean not good.
Right. So just DYS, dis or DYS, you can think of as meaning bad. Yeah. So a utopian society is a world or a place or an imagined place where everything is perfect. Dystopia is an imagined place where things are not so perfect. Something is not quite the way we might wish it to be. So in The Giver, I think we have both. For some people, it's designed because it is the perfect way to live. But for most people living today, we disagree that something's not quite right about the way things work. So an imagined place in which everything is bad. And I'm not sure that I would agree that the place where the giver takes place is all bad. Would you agree? Do you think it's all bad? Is there anything to like about where they are living?
Yes. For example, I like that children have to check many, have to experience many works, different works in their community, what is unusual in today's world.
Experience different work, different types of work?
Yes.
Talk more about that.
I don't know how much I can say. They spent some hours helping in nurturing center. They spent some hours playing with younger kids. So they are sent to check different types of works.
And this doesn't happen in your real world?
No.
It's unusual. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Gerard?
I think a good thing of the society is that there is no violence. Except when someone must be released.
Yes, I was going to say, what about that release idea? Yes. Amr, are you able to hear us okay?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, okay. I can hear you as well. Yes.
Good, yeah. So, how are you doing?
All right. Have you read chapter 2?
Actually, I don't read it yet. I just thought of now.
Okay, so you'll be able to listen in and...
yes, definitely. I can listen to you.
Okay. All right. So in the U.S., I think... and we might ask you to mute your mic when you're not talking, Elmer, because I am hearing a little bit of,
okay,
feedback. Thanks. In the U.S., I think many children maybe not experience full days of different types of work, but many children do have a chance to have a little bit of hands-on for many types of career. It's built into elementary, middle school, and high school education. So I'm curious to hear from Gerard whether or not you felt you had exposure to different careers. And Amr and Joanna, if you have more to say, did you have a chance to know what it's like to work in many different types of environments as part of your educational experience?
Not really.
And I don't know if my experience is typical for most people across the U.S. or if it was unusual. I'll have to ask. Amr, what about you? Did you have a chance to learn about different types of jobs as you were growing up?
I guess, you know, I used to help people to get their right.
The sound is breaking up a little bit, so I wasn't sure if you said rice or rides or something else.
It's actually, as a lawyer, I can help people to earn their right. Can you hear me now?
Some, not clearly. So you help people earn their...
Yes.
Yes. Hey, now your sound is cut off, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So this is what you're doing now. But we're yes. talking in the giver, children are given the chance to experiment and explore different yeah. types of careers, different types of jobs.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering whether you in your childhood, whether you had the chance to hands-on get to know what different types of jobs were like.
Actually, I used to work since I was five, and I was not working. After high school, I started my own business.
Okay, but that is as older. Okay, and Joanna, do you remember any exposure to opportunities to explore different types of jobs?
No.
No. Interesting. That might make for an interesting topic for Loop and for me to check other places. I know that my parents took me to even more places than some of my friends had the chance to see. But as part of our school curriculum, we learned a lot about different jobs. I'm not sure how many by age 12. And then the giver at age 12, they decide what you're going to do. And that's seventh grade. And by seventh grade, I probably didn't have too much of an idea of very many different jobs. And I'm not sure what I would have chosen to be or wanted to be at that age or what others might choose for me. Who knows what I might be today? So you like the fact that they get to explore different types of work and there's less violence. Anything else that we like about this dystopian society? Or potentially dystopian society?
Is a quiet society?
Quiet. Quiet because it's controlled, right? It's so controlled.
You have to go to bed at a specific hour?
Yeah. Right? Yes, tranquil. Yeah, tranquil. Yeah. I just realized as you were typing what you had said, Gerard. Yeah, they're very controlled. Right? At age 8, you have to give up your comfort object. So in U.S. culture, many babies at age 2 or 3 give up their blanket, which is a comfort object. And many mothers and fathers try to get a blanket, favorite blanket taken away. But I kept my stuffed animals until I was in college. I still had some. So at age 8, I would not have been ready to take all my playful stuff away and have to be more serious-minded. Yeah. How about the idea of parents having to put in an application if you're ready for your first child? And then everyone gets, well, I don't know if we know that yet, trying to stay within our reading of chapter 2. What about this idea of, we find out in this chapter that parents have to apply, go through the process to be formally approved for children.
Sometimes I like this idea when I see some of my students and their parents. So not everyone should have children.
But who should decide though?
Sometimes I know that parents here have children only to have money for alcohol. And they don't care about children.
How do they get money by having children? Most people think the opposite, that when you have children, you have less money.
Because our government give them money because they have children, and some social organizations always also give money because some parents are poor and they have children, so we should help them. And sometimes they have more money than people who work.
Interesting. No comment from Gerard or Amr. Should parents, what do you think about this idea that parents have to submit an application and have it approved?
It doesn't look nice.
Certainly different, huh? Many strong faith-based faithful parents who, families who follow a specific strong faith often have guidance before they get married. And part of that, part of the classes and discussions they have with a spiritual advisor prior to marriage talk about having children. And there's some coaching given then, but it's not exactly the same as submitting the application and waiting for approval. Once you're approved to be married, you are approved to have children. In most cultures, that is the assumption. It's a little bit different here. And then we don't know yet in chapter two, we don't know yet who has the children. Where do they come from? Because all we learn is that they're presented at the ceremony. And they're all ones. When you get your child, they're all ones. No matter, they're all 50 parents at a time get children.
I thought that it could be taught at a school a matter relating to being a parent, because it's a thing that is not taught and it's very important. And some parents don't know how to be good parents.
So many high schools in the U.S. At high school age, I forget if it's junior or senior year, many schools have this project where the students are given real eggs, and they're supposed to, I think it's real eggs, or I think it's an egg, and they're supposed to treat it as if it's a baby for a week, and they have to write about it and talk about changing its diapers and crying at night, and they have to try and keep this precious egg without it getting broken. So they have to not treat it the same as you would a baby, because of course eggs are not the same, but they have this whole curriculum written around taking care of this fragile object. And they have to bring it back and write in their journal about, I don't know, I wasn't part of it, so I don't know more about it, but I read about it every once in a while. Students look forward to it as a joke, and then sometimes it's a true learning experience. So some attempt to teach a little bit about parenting, but you're right, it's not generally a taught part of basic education here. But of course, if you teach parenting in high school, that's sort of like saying they're ready to have kids in high school. It's like encouraging them to have sex so they can have children. That part wouldn't go over very well. be some objection. But where do you go to learn about parenting in your countries? Where do you learn about parenting?
On the internet.
Your answer of the day.
Well, in Spain, there are some magazines that talk about parenting. When people are about to have a baby, they buy all these magazines with names like Being Parents or something like this. Or books.
Joanna, Amr, where do you learn? Where do people learn about being parents, about parenting?
I think that we can enroll in learning courses or something like that. Or maybe we meet in book club or something like that.
None of you are mentioning the, I don't know if I'm the only parent here, but I learned from my parents. I heard and learned a lot from my parents and grandparents when they were alive. And of course you learn by experience. the best teacher, right? Sometimes. Interesting. So who do you think bears these children as you read chapter 2? And some of you know the answer because you've finished the book and seen the movie. But as you're reading chapters 1 and 2, where are these children coming from? Why are there only 50? Yeah, playgrounds. Yes. True. Very true from other parents. Yeah. Why 50? What is this? It's so controlled, so freakily controlled. And you have to put in an application and press a button and get a baby? Where do these babies come from? What were you thinking, if you remember, as you read chapters 1 and 2? We learn about certain roles, nurturers and other roles that some members of this society have.
From the chapter 1 and 2, this community looks quite small. So maybe they were afraid of too many people living in this community. Maybe they were afraid of food, of some houses for more people.
So you wonder about that, but that's still not telling us where these babies come from. I sort of imagined the first time like military barracks. Because in my life experience, military is where you have somewhat similar control and inability to operate normally. You have to go by a lot more rules, as I understand the military. And in the base, there are so many beds and so many men or women. So maybe I'm the only one thinking about this. But I found myself wondering, and again, as I reread, wondering who has these babies. And we will find out. So at age 12, the ceremony of 12, they tell you what your future is. You don't get to choose, they tell you. So at age 12, remembering back, what job do you think you might have liked to have been assigned to?
But I think it's too early to assign a job, because it's only at 12 years old, children are starting the adolescence, and they can change a lot.
I think back and I cringe, because at that age I was sewing a lot, and I hate sewing, so it would have been terrible if my chosen career were in the realm of seamstress or tailor. I don't think I would have been very happy, but who knows? Maybe if they tell you at 12 you're at an impressionable age. So maybe if they tell you at 12, you're wonderful at this. Yes.
So did you what going?
Sounds not clear, sorry.
So are you at sewing?
Am I good at sewing? No. No, I am not. Oh, I didn't even think about that, Joanna. We don't know. You're right. We don't know how long they live. Maybe this dystopian society releases everyone at a young age. Ooh. Go ahead. So.
Yes, and we also don't know what age they can be married, what age they can ask for a child. Mm-hmm. So maybe the elder people are around 30, 35, and that's all. So when you are 12, it might be a good age to start your career.
What do you say to that, Gerard?
I don't know. We don't know other things.
Yeah, there's a lot we don't know yet.
Yeah, I think we won't know. We won't know everything. Some things that you may ask you, but for instance, parents have sex each other? Parents?
Yeah.
Because the children are not their children.
Right?
And I think...
I never even thought of that, but you're right. Yeah.
And maybe, I guess it's forbidden, because that can be a source of problems, jealousy, and the society is very controlled, so.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Wow, and they do, we will find out soon. I don't think we know in chapter 2 yet, but there's this pill everyone has to take once a day.
Ah, okay.
That will be introduced. And maybe that curbs desire as well. Wow. Interesting. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that this control part is very hard for me to feel comfortable about. So it would lean my description toward the dystopian point of view. And then there's this comfort object. So do you remember a comfort object from your childhood?
I had a stuffed dog.
A stuffed dog, okay.
Having bits?
Say that again, Amr?
Is exactly, I said... I think having bits...
Having pets. Pets. Oh, as a comfort object. Certainly pets can be interesting. I was thinking in the book, the comfort objects, I think, are all inanimate, not alive. But for many children, pets surely are. For many adults, pets can be comfort objects. I wonder if in The Giver, if any of them are pets somehow. I don't think so. Especially when we hear the description of how they take it off the shelf so you can't even have it all day. Only your comfort object is only at night, very precise and controlled.
I remember when I was between two and three years old, I had an inflatable cat.
An inflatable cat?
Yeah, inflatable cat.
Ah, interesting. And this was your comfort object? Okay. Why not? I always think of them as soft and cuddly, and somehow an inflatable cat does not sound soft and cuddly. But I'm also thinking of Irina in a post recently mentioned a carved wooden Olympic bear. She mentioned it in one of her posts recently, and she said that she actually slept with this. Her father carved a bear out of a piece of wood, and she said she even slept with it sometimes. And that sounds even less soft and cuddly than an inflatable cat. So I guess if it affords comfort, however it comes.
I guess the name of this bear is Misha because it was the mascot of the Olympic Games in Moscow.
Right, right.
I remember because there was in Spain television a cartoon about this.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess comfort objects can be made of many different things and take many different shapes. Often animals. But how would you like it at age 8 to have it taken away forever, just because you're 8?
No way. I still have a few stuffed toys.
Right? So I'm trying to think, growing up, the types of things that were taken away because we were too old for that now. Can you think of other things in your life where you were taught by your upbringing to change in some way because it was no longer appropriate?
The pacifier.
Yeah. And blankets, I mentioned some people try to get their children to stop being in need of their blankie. So many babies call blankets blankies. What about as you get older, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14? Are there things that are taken away or that you are encouraged to leave behind you?
I think children leave those things by themselves because their friends would think that they are childish.
So not really on their own, peer pressure. peer pressure. So here the peer pressure may or may not exist. But it comes from above or beyond or somewhere out there.
Here it was quite popular, the peer pressure, a few years ago. But now, as I observe some children, when I go with them, for example, for summer camps, so even older kids like 15, 16, 17 years old, they are very proud that they have some favorite pillows, that they take teddy bears with them.
So I wonder how their lives would change if those were all gone at age 8. Yeah, it seems like this dystopian society takes a lot of privileges away early. I wonder, in our lives, mass media and this sort of like subliminal messages being sent from the internet, and how much are we controlling our lives based on whatever we're fed from Facebook and Loop and the internet? How controlled are we without realizing it? Choices of products we use or don't use, or fashion we choose or don't choose, colors. And some of that's age influence, more peer influenced. But think about the control the internet has on what news we read to some extent, right? So it's like being forced to only pay attention to one news channel for the rest of your life and only hear things from a certain bias. Odd. Any fun vocabulary that you picked up on in chapter 2? I think it was an easier read than some chapters with less unusual or less familiar vocabulary. Anything that you wanted to ask about or that came to mind? Irina shared wobbly. How would you define wobbly? No answers. We're cheating. I see someone going to cheat. So unsteady. similar to toddlers and to toddle. If you wobble or toddle, you're not steady, you're not secure, so you're unsteady and moving, a sense of movement involved with a wobble. So if you set a glass down on a table and it doesn't stay and it jiggles a little bit before it finally stops wobbling. So wobbly as the adjective. I don't remember what was wobbly in chapter 2. Anybody have the line that's from? Anybody finding it? I have my book, not the online book, open. Anybody finding wobbly?
Yes.
Can you read it for us?
Some were already walking wobbly on their unsteady legs. Ah. Others were no more than a few days old, wrapped in blankets held by their nurturers.
Ah, okay, so we're talking about the ones, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so everybody's one, even if they're just teeny tiny little thing or almost a toddler. Yeah, they're called a one. The 50 ones, or 50 minus any, released. So any other vocabulary or continuing with so peekaboo. Ah, okay. Also on Irina's list. So what's peekaboo?
I know.
You know.
You hide Well, it's a game you play with a baby.
Mm-hmm.
You hide and then you appear suddenly and say, peekaboo.
Yeah, so for really young babies, it's just like this. You just put hands in front of your face. Peekaboo, peekaboo, peekaboo. and peek from all different aspects. And yeah, it works well behind door jams, behind off camera, on camera. Probably people do peekaboo on internet, on Skype now. Grandma in another city, peekaboo. Oh, gosh, I bet that happens a lot. Yeah. So do you have another expression for this in Spanish, in Polish? And Amar, I'm not sure what your first language is. Do you have an expression for peekaboo in your languages?
I think it's a kind of hide-seek.
Huh? So you just use the English. Ah, cuckoo. Oh, I like that. Ah, cuckoo. Cuckoo.
In Spanish also, cuckoo.
Cuckoo. See, but in crazy English, cuckoo means crazy. Cuckoo, cuckoo. Means that you're a little bit unbalanced mentally. Interesting. Sounds like that are funny how they do or don't carry through. Interesting. Yeah. What about to fret? What does it mean to fret? And if you can.
To worry about small problems and important things.
Mm-hmm. Can you not? Is it incorrect to use fret over an important thing? So if you change that definition to significant or important things, would it be incorrect?
No.
He's checking other sources. Joanna says no, it would not be incorrect. So to fret is to worry, right? Good synonym. My mom used to say, you're fretting over nothing. Stop worrying. So I don't even know if it would be more often used for important or less important things. In my usage, it's usable for anything you are worrying about.
Mm-hmm.
And as a lifelong worrier, I fret a lot. Joanna, do you have the passage for peekaboo or fret?
For peekaboo, yes. Every day at the nurturing center, I play bounce on the knee and peekaboo and hug the teddy.
And hug the teddy. Yeah, so this is the father. He gets to play every day at the nurturing. T is like a CH, nurturing. So every day at the nurturing center, he gets to play peekaboo. Yeah. I think that job would have worked for me for a short while, but I don't think I'm quite sure now I would not want to be a nurturing center employee. Would not want that to have been what I have done for ever and ever and ever. Yeah, this idea of being forced into one career forever is an interesting concept in today's world. No thoughts from Gerard or Amr. Do most people you know stay in one job forever? Do most retirees you know, have most retirees retired from one job, one same career?
Yeah.
In Europe, I think we don't change jobs as often as in the United States.
You think it's still the norm?
Yes. A norm, which we can change a few times during a work life, but not many. And I know you also change your towns. You change a lot your place where you live, the place where you live.
Mm-hmm. And that's something else we don't really know, do we, about this place, whether it's stationary and everyone stays there. It sounds like they stay there forever inside their whatever it is, city, town, community, whatever we call it. Yes, and changing location also. The norm is to stay in one place.
And buy your home. In Spain, we tend to buy our homes.
You do? Not rent, buy. No.
Yeah.
But homes can be an apartment?
Yes, an apartment, for instance. I live in an apartment. Mm.
See, and I don't think of that as buying a home. It can be your home, but when you say buy a home, I picture a freestanding house. I don't picture an apartment. My mind doesn't think that way.
So okay. A home place. What about home place?
And keep one home place. I don't know what the right word is. Home place is not a common collocation, but nothing wrong with saying it's your home. I just the connotation doesn't transfer automatically. So you would say that's still the norm to stay in one location and to stay in one career?
Yeah. One or twice.
Huh? Interesting. So I guess the U.S. is quite different. I would guess that very definitely a minority of high school graduates expect to stay in one career. At age 12, I don't know, but at age 17 and 18, the expectation, the culture teaches you not to expect to stay in one career. And employers don't expect it. Most employers don't expect it anymore. Huh, I didn't realize that wasn't a global change. Amr, Joanna, would you say the same for your experience?
Yes.
Yeah.
Stay and very in often, for example, your employer tries to keep you because they invest some money in you. They send you for some courses to have a higher qualification.
Hmm. And the employers still sponsor that type of training.
Yes.
To keep often. You in the same career.
Yes. Yeah. And after 15, 20 years in one company, you are highly qualified. You have a high qualifications for your job, and employers. So it's difficult to change your career.
So not only the norm, but difficult to change. Interesting.
Because at age, when you are, for example, at age 40, 45, the other employer don't want to invest in you when they can hire someone young and invest in young people.
So it's also difficult to be hired anywhere else after a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in today's economy, it can be difficult to be hired anywhere,
yeah.
Period. Mm-hmm. Not really funny, but an ironic truth too often. Interesting. Amar, I don't know if you're still listening. Do you think it's a norm for people to stay in one career, in one city? Is that the norm?
I guess most of the foreigners not traveling and moving from place to another place, and maybe they need to change their career as well.
So to follow the job, they might relocate to follow the career?
I don't think so.
Okay, so most do stay.
Most people would like to change to earn more money, something like that.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. I guess I didn't realize that was as unusual as it might be for here. Interesting. Total switch here now. So Irina had on her list of things that she wondered about bounce on the knee. And I wonder if any of you have ever heard the little ditty, and I'll call it a ditty. It's a little song. If you pretend that my hands here are my knees, you put a baby sitting on your knees and you say, off we go to Boston, off we go to Lynn. And you bounce your knees up and down and bounce the baby, which makes the baby happy. Off we go to Boston, off we go to Lynn. Watch out, baby, or you might fall. And you drop one knee and the baby tilts and you catch the baby, but the baby loves this little game. And we bounce on the knee and play this game and sing this song. Have you ever heard that, or do you have something similar that you do with babies, bouncing them on your knee?
Yes.
We all talk at once. We all stop at once. Okay. So common in Spain. And
Yeah, in Poland too. And parents often sing different songs.
Okay, so different songs that just have some sort of beat and will drop one knee. So I was really surprised that Irina had this as an expression she doesn't understand because she works with babies. So I'm curious about bouncing, motion, rocking, and bouncing are often ways to pacify a baby. And stuffed toy is the last one on her list, vocabulary. A synonym for stuffed toy? For the meaning of stuffed in this description, anybody? What is a stuffed toy?
Like a teddy bear?
Mm-hmm. And plush toys is another word often used to describe them when they're for sale, stuffed or plush toys. And they are often stuffed with lots of different things. Do you know stuffed toys from your childhood, what they were stuffed with and what they're stuffed with now?
Yeah. Now they are stuffed with some small, tiny balls. I even don't know the. It's not a styrofoam.
Okay, so.
I even don't know the material.
And beanie bags? Do any of you know beanie bags? They were a fad. 1970s and 80s, I guess. They're collector's items now. Beanie bags, they were actually stuffed with beans, dried beans. My parents, in my parents' day, often straw So lots of different things that you can stuff a stuffed toy with. We used to make them with old socks. When I was a Girl Scout, we made stuffed toys with old socks, balled them up and stuffed them inside. So many different things you can use to fill a stuffed toy. And I don't know what they were like in The Giver. Except soft, they weren't inflatable. No inflatable cats mentioned yet. And no carved wooden toys either. Any other unusual collocations or vocabulary that you wanted to ask about?
Maybe not vocabulary, but one thought. That it was such kind of a right community and everything should be done in a specific order, but one rules was broken, that older siblings taught how to ride on a bicycle.
So a right community?
Yeah, because you had to give up on your comfort object at 8, you could ride on bicycle at age 9, and there was something in a specific order.
So do you like that as a mathematician?
No.
And can you identify what you don't like about it?
Because I don't have some kind of a freedom.
Yeah. You do and you don't, right? Maybe some extent, but those loudspeakers are everywhere, right? And you're being watched. I feel like this all happens inside a box and I'm being watched at every move, sort of like reality TV. When they have you monitored 24/7. Definitely feels like a lack of freedom. Gerard, yeah. Any vocabulary or favorite lines or thoughts? Thoughts on the receiver? We learn a little bit more about this receiver.
But we still don't know about it.
Well, we know a little bit about it.
No, not in the chapter 1 and 2.
Yeah, in chapter 2 when they talk about the ceremony. And Jonas was surprised.
I have a line. Mm-hmm. I like
it. Okay.
Receiver was the most important elder. Jonas had never ever seen him, that he knew of. Someone in a position of such importance lived and worked alone.
Yeah, and I think in this community, alone is a scary word, right? You haven't had much chance from one onward to be alone. Everything's so controlled. So that's mentioned in chapter 2. And Jonas was surprised was one of the lines that that I marked as a passage to share. His father tells him that he knew, he was not surprised. He kind of knew what the father knew what role he would be assigned at the ceremony of 12. And Jonas was surprised by this. And I wanted to ask you why you think he was surprised.